I would say I'm definitely very Marmite, you know, the Vegemite of Australia. And I think I'd say I want to come across approachable. I want to come across knowledgeable and empathetic, but I also want to be direct, like a no BS approach, warm and friendly, but equally some sort of professional.
Hello and welcome to the Brand My Career podcast. I'm your host, Alex Cutterford, and I'm so glad you're joining me today. My goal is to help you take ownership of your career, find your people through personal branding and networking, and take career-enhancing action. Managing your life and career can be hard. That's why every fortnight I'll be releasing an episode where I interview a diverse range of guests that will help you find clarity. Build confidence in your career. Let's get into it. Welcome back to another episode of the Brand My Career podcast. And today I have Nada Allen with me all the way from London. She's winding down, I'm ramping up, and we're going to have a good chat today.
I love that. I feel like when that second coffee kicks in, I'm probably going to be very ready to snooze. So I'm going to really try my best.
So we were just saying you'll probably want to jump to the middle because that's where we're going to sort of meet at our peaks. But we're going to have a good chat today, chatting all things LinkedIn, personal branding, career journey. And so we're going to have a really fun conversation. So Nada, do you want to just maybe share a bit about what it is that you do to begin?
It's a really tricky question. It should be easy. I should understand how to answer this question now. But I'd say I am a ghostwriter and a LinkedIn consultant, as well as on the side, I do some one-to-one business coaching. And it all started a couple of years ago when I was kind of made redundant and decided to go my own way. And it snowballed in the most serendipitous way. And here we are two and a bit years later, doing a job that I never even knew existed.
That is curious. I was going to ask you about that, like whether you had thought about ghostwriting and that sort of thing for a period beforehand, or if it was something that sort of came left of field for you.
Never knew it existed. Like, I think the only concept of ghostwriting I'd heard of was maybe writing people's autobiographies. But that was loose in itself. So this is something that really I came to know because I'd been working in the space and specifically in LinkedIn, where this is not only a very lucrative career path, but it's also something that almost seems very saturated now. And I don't know if that's just because I've been on it for a while, but it seems like every other Tom, Dick and Harry is a ghostwriter now. So it's really interesting. I think it's opened a lot of doors for people. And I think it's definitely a viable career choice for a lot of people who have creative skills, very good interviewing skills, love researching, and also enjoy helping others to share their story, because I think that's the biggest thing for me that I enjoy the most. It's people struggle to articulate something, whether that's their own personal story or vulnerabilities or even their success, and even includes how they communicate something that's quite tricky and complex to comprehend to the average person. It could be really technical and they just want to share loads of jargon. How do you make that interesting? How do you make that fun? How do you make that readable? So yeah, for me, it's definitely been the middleman, I guess, between trying to help someone communicate their story in a way that's really interesting, but also authentic to them. And I guess that's why I still continue to do it and help others do it as well.
Yeah, because it's such a powerful thing, being able to tell your story, right? But so many people can't find the words. And one of the things that I found interesting about you and you know, you reached out, we got chatting on LinkedIn, and your ability to write with your voice. It's like the way you write, it's like it's how you would actually sound. And I've always been impressed by people that can do that, because I'm like, oh, that's such a skill to be able to write the way that you sound, because like I don't think I write the way that I would actually talk, because I don't necessarily have that skill set.
I think it's interesting, and I feel like a lot of that is because, I mean, how deep do you want to go? But partly it's psychology and how much you feel confident in yourself and how would you come across. The other half is, I think, masking. A lot of the time when you're in a corporate world or you're in a specific job that requires you to be a certain person and represent yourself in a certain way, you tend to dull down how you would normally act or behave. And that comes from not only fear of acceptance, but also fear of rejection. And again, that stems into whether it's personal and social, or whether it's within a professional setting. And I feel like a lot of people that I've worked with have said the same. They really don't know how to talk like they sound or write like they sound. And when we go into the deepness of it, it really just is understanding who you are as a person. Like, it does get very, very psychological. I often joke with my clients that it will become quite therapy coded, because there's a reason why you open up more and are able to share things that are personal and vulnerable to you, and yeah, just be very open. So we have to go in very like deep and understanding their language, like how you, words that you use, verbiage. I think even down to phrases and analogies. Some people hate fluffy analogies, other people love them. Some people just constantly talk in like cryptic philosophical language that you never understand. But yeah, so I think it's because, in answer to that, a lot of us try and dull down, I think, instead of raise up, which is interesting.
Did you always enjoy writing though? Like, when you were young, was writing something you always enjoyed doing?
Yes, I definitely had a creative spurt. I remember once, actually, I was in maybe year three or year four, which is around 8, I think, tracking back a while ago. One of my teachers said that I'd make a great journalist. And I remember at the time thinking, oh God, I don't think I could ever do something like that. Maybe because at the time journaling had a bit more of a bad rep. It's kind of more paparazzi style of journalism. That's all I really thought of. I was thinking I don't really want to be OK Magazine kind of journalist. And I think at the time as well, I wanted to go into acting or something sort of more creative. So I actually found it a slap in the face when she said, oh, you'd be a great journalist. I was like, do you hate me? Do you want to start my journeys and my dreams off on the wrong note? But obviously I realised that I do have a knack with words, and I think that's something that has always been a bit of a skill, something that I've learned to nurture. Don't get me wrong, when I first started writing, I was shit. Like, I will have to put that out there. If I look back, I will cringe at some of my first posts or texts that I wrote, articles, blogs, whatever. But that shows growth. If I can cringe at that now, then I feel mildly better that I've honed in on that skill. But in a long-winded way of saying, yes, I had the skill for writing, but I didn't really know that I would pursue it as a job until literally 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's interesting, James. And like you said before, around the self-confidence piece, because that's, and I've spoken about this on the show, like, that's my biggest holdback when it comes to the writing piece. Because my story of year two goes, my year two teacher trying to teach me how to spell, and I just couldn't get it. And eventually she got to the point of going, maybe you're just not going to be a good speller. and she kind of like, she's like, I literally like ran her out of ways to teach.
Really?
Yeah. And so I just sort of absorbed that and went, oh, okay, yeah, cool. Like, I'm not a good speller. I'll do other things, and I'm never going to try to learn how to spell again. And so this sort of like drifted through school, like not worrying about that, and just constantly having that narrative of, oh, I'm just not good at that. So like, that's not my thing. I'll do sports, you know, like, so, and it was interesting. And then over the years now, as I've then had things that I want to do that require writing, that's when I sort of was able to start getting better. This once you're applying yourself to it. And so for me, I've always just sort of, well, it was the lesson that I've taken out of it is, once you're motivated by something, that'll drive you to learn the skills that you need to fill in the gaps to a point. I definitely look back now and go, oh, I wish I had been applying myself a bit more. It would make certain things a lot easier. But I've sort of built up other skills around it as well.
even the emotional intelligence piece around being okay with it and being open and upfront about it. So I'll talk with my boss, and like I spoke with my team and told them that, you know, about that story and my confidence and things like that. And so then when I was working on this report with my boss, and we're going back and forth refining it, and he goes, I feel so much better correcting all your spelling, knowing that you've like opened up at this and said, like, it's, you know, it's a thing, because otherwise you could feel really awkward, like the amount of spelling you had to fix.
Like, at what point do we get nervous?
So, oh, is he gonna be like offended, or like is he gonna feel stupid if I like show him all this spelling fixing? But it was all good.
It's nice that they didn't make you feel bad about it, though, because I feel like that's even, you know, it's awkward on both ends, I guess, if there's no one really talking about it. But I think that's what you've said there, key skill. If there is motivation behind it, you will learn. But another element of that is, it's okay if you don't want to. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can just delegate things that you're maybe not as confident in. But there are so many skills that people actually just don't really like, and that's also okay. Like, some people what I work with just hate writing. They're like, oh, I'd rather just talk, or I'd rather just like share a few bullet points, and I can understand that. But also, going back to like what your teacher said about, you know, not being a good speller, I do feel like we're so malleable at school. Like, I really wish teachers were more careful with the language that they use to help and nurture young kids into what they want to do, because I've always been quite good at languages as well, and my sister enjoyed languages but struggled with pronunciation, and her teachers would say, oh, you're not very good at Spanish, you're just not going to pass, like, there really is no point. And it just stopped her from learning any of the languages. And whenever we try, and, you know, I'm half Bosnian, so we'll go over there, and she can't really speak the language, and she's just got it in her head, she's like, I'm not going to learn it because I'm not good at it. And I was like, well, what makes you say that? And she said, it was because my teachers told me that I wasn't good at it, but I really do want to learn French, but I know I'm not going to be good at it. And I'm like, oh god, this is just, it's like a catch-22, because she's been told, you know, x years ago that that's the truth. And oh yeah, just gets me a bit annoyed when, you know, you're in schools and you're trying to learn and grow and find out what you're good at and what maybe you don't really like, or what you do like, and then you just got some teachers saying, oh yeah, you're shit at this, don't bother. You're like, okay, thank you, personal authority, I won't bother.
Oh jeez, oh, I'm so glad you told me now before I wasted so much time exploring this thing that I really enjoy.
Yeah, literally, oh, crush my dreams.
They do so much good, but it's like one moment can... It's amazing the moments that you can cling to as a kid when you're growing up, and the things that you absorb.
Yeah, definitely.
So you mentioned you kind of got made redundant. Talk me through that scenario. What happened that sort of led you to, because then it's obviously launched you into what you're doing now.
Yeah, that's a fun one, Alex. I think if I track back, I've always had maybe not an issue with authority, because that makes me sound like such a rebel. I was a very goody two shoes, like almost to the point of people pleasing, and I would break my back trying to make everyone happy at work. I'd work overtime, I'd get super burnt out, and it was just kind of the norm. I just wanted to impress, do well, get paid peanuts for it. But that's another day, another talk for another day. And I think I got to the point where every 3 to 6 months, I would get bored at the job that I was at, and I would find something new. And I spent my first year after uni really unsure of where I wanted to go. I studied criminology and psychology with the expectation that I would become Agent JJ from Criminal Minds, and lo and behold, that did not work out. And then I decided that maybe I could go into sales, because it's one of two options. When you come out of uni and you have no idea what to do, it's either sales or marketing. And then you funnel through. So I did sales for a year, didn't enjoy it. Lockdown broke out. I decided to quit because my mental health had took a rapid decline and I wasn't enjoying the role. And I'm a big believer in trying to connect with alignment and purpose. And if you're not doing either of those things, it doesn't matter how much you're getting paid. And for me, my health and my sanity was a priority and continues to be today. So then taught myself kind of how to write and hone that skill. I found an internship for a content writer. And then fast forward another couple of years, I'd done maybe two or three roles as a copywriter in-house. And then, yeah, June 2022 is that now, our company was going into, I don't know what the term is, but let's just say it was flopping. And
insolvency.
I was then, that's the one, thank you. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, there's a word. And yeah, they were going around saying, we're going to need to make some cuts. But by this point, I'd already been looming how I was going to quit. So when it came around, I was like, oh, well, I volunteer as tribute. You can cut me away. And then I'd spent about a month trying to figure out what my plan was. And I refused to sign up to another 9-to-5 that I knew didn't fulfill me. And I thought, I'm just going to go my own way. I've always wanted to do my own thing. Why not now? Why not start now? And I think there was a narrative around, you're too young, you don't know enough yet, you're inexperienced. And at the time I was 25, nearly 26. And I thought, well, I know enough and I can just continue to teach myself as I go. And then, yeah, a couple months in, got my first client, got another one. It started out in copywriting. And then as I was building my brand on LinkedIn, I had a lot of people message me saying, wow, I really love what you're doing. I love your posts. Can you write for me? And I was like, lol, what do you mean write for you? And then that's when I found out about ghostwriting. And like I said, it snowballed. It happened very rapidly. I had a couple of mentors also in the space who are still my friends and peers today. They took me under their wing. And yeah, now we're ghostwriter, LinkedIn expert, guru, apparently. And on the side, I think one of my biggest aims is just to help other people who are also similar to me, don't really know where they want to go and how to develop their skills, monetize a skill. And that's why, for me, I'm trying to make self-employment very accessible. So that's why on the side, I do a lot of mentoring and coaching for people who are like in their first 0 to 2 years of self-employment. Cause it's just something that, yeah, I'm definitely really passionate about and just want to help bridge that gap. You know, like we said, schools teach you a lot and they're amazing, but on the flip side, it's not really preparing you for the real world, especially now we have so many opportunities. So trying to give people the know-how of self-employment versus a 9-to-5, and you're allowed to do whatever you want to do, but know that you have options. And if I teach you the how, you'll be able to do that with less risk aversion. And yeah, that's where we're at today.
And we'll dig into your LinkedIn guru-ness shortly, but I wanna this zip back to, you did sales and you didn't enjoy it. What was it about sales that you didn't like?
Good question. One, I think it was the product. I didn't really connect with it. At first I did. It was a tool, essentially, for tenants to log and report issues. So I think a big part was I didn't really vibe with it. And then the other half was it wasn't an in-person sales. It was basically glorified cold calling or warm calling, whatever you want to call it. But either way, it had taken a toll on my mental health because it was very anxiety provoking and there was a lot of rejection involved. People would laugh at you down the phone and it was just really soul destroying. And I think my skin at that point wasn't very thick. So I was very isolated. And then plus COVID, that meant doing a job that you really didn't like for 40 hours a week from your bedroom. And it just, you didn't have the office team members to kind of laugh about it with anymore. So it wasn't even so much of the skill, because I enjoy sales as a skill. I think it was just the environment that I was in and how I was kind of being made to sell as well. Like, people already had a solution, for example, and you had to try and convince them that our solution was better. And I was like, but that's not how my brain works. If I was going out shopping and someone said, hey, here's an Android phone. I'm like, I'm okay. I'm happy with my iPhone. Thank you. And they were trying to upsell me with an Android. I would literally scream down their face. So I was like, this isn't really how I personally would buy, nor how I want to sell. So I think there was just like a clash in values as well. So yeah, I guess it boils down to product, values, and environment.
No, it's just good to hear because they can get glossed over, and then someone doesn't realize that, oh, maybe I wouldn't like sales either. Or actually, no, that sounds like my environment for me. I love taking on a good challenge and trying to change someone from an Android to an iPhone.
Yeah, for sure. And I think like, it is a good skill. There is a lot to learn from sales. I think that's why some people really do thrive in it. And if you are target oriented and you love, you know, seeing how many demos you can book in a week, that's good. It's also a little bit repetitive. So it's not that's not a bad thing. It's just that if you quite like doing things on automatic mode, then you're going to enjoy that.
Yeah,
you do. And then also, like, if you enjoy talking to people and understanding and empathizing with their challenges and how you could make them better, that is a lot of sales as well, and how you provide a solution to people's problems. So a lot of people who have like high emotional intelligence and empathy will enjoy sales, as well as, I guess, people who are very people skill oriented and also enjoy how to fix a problem. I think a lot of problem solving. Yeah. So for those types of people, and who also do thrive in a little bit of competition as well, maybe even high stakes, and, you know, enjoy hearing a lot of no's, then you'll love it. You'll enjoy it.
All right. So now moving into your area of expertise now. And so ghostwriting, personal branding. What does personal branding mean to you? When you think about personal branding, what's sort of your foundational understanding of that?
So I consider it your digital CV or portfolio in the 21st century or today. So documenting things that you are passionate about, your drive, your purpose, your mission, as well as who you are as a person, and how that can attract opportunities for you. So whether that means you're a founder of a business and you're trying to look for clients, or fresh out of university, college, wanting to get a job in the climate health sector, and you are hired through your own platform. So that's how I would describe it.
Yeah, it's building that presence so that people can find you, understand you, and work out where you fit in the world, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really great tool. That's what I would say. It's something that I really wish people learned more how to do. And, you know, a personal brand feels like a buzzword nowadays, but effectively it's how you can, sounds really weird, but monetize your existence and find and attract opportunities. Because when you come out of the womb, you need to know how to sustainably survive. And a lot of that is going to revolve around money. So if you're on this planet, then, you know, trying to work out, like you said, where you fit and how you fit into the world, and then how you can make money doing something that you love.
I sort of, when I was trying to hone in on my understanding of it, I talk about it like your personal brand is your ability to communicate who you are, what you value, who you belong to, and who you're best positioned to serve. And I had people sort of like, and I was doing a talk to my team on it and talking about the who you belong to, and they were sort of like, what do you mean who you belong to? And I was like, and the analogy I use is when the teenager walks out of the bedroom, and they walked into the bedroom as your beautiful little daughter. She was, you know, she loved you so much. And then she walks out, and all of a sudden she's dressed in all black, and she's got mascara on and you've never seen her in makeup before. And now you get grunts instead of like warm cuddles. And she wants to hang out with her friends more than she wants to hang out with you. And all that's happening is they're now learning how they want to communicate who they belong to, and they want to say, I belong to my friends. I'm not like your little princess anymore that you know is your little child. I'm an independent person. I want to hang out with my friends. And they don't realize they don't, but it's this personal brand.
Love that analogy. Might have to trademark that.
Look, you're welcome to use it. You've been generous with your time today. So if I see a post, come up with that, and you do your next park walk dressed in all black, I'll know that.
We'll know what's going down.
Yeah. So what's your personal brand?
In terms of aura or what I want to do?
So I guess when you're thinking about, so you're showing up online, you're a ghostwriter, but I guess how do you want people to perceive you?
That's a good question. I would say I'm definitely very Marmite, you know, the Vegemite of Australia. And I think I'd say I want to come across approachable. I want to come across knowledgeable and empathetic, but I also want to be direct, like a no BS approach, warm and friendly, but equally some sort of professional, especially in the space, so that people see that I'm credible, but equally that they have a friend in me. And I think I'm very much anti-status quo, which probably comes across in a lot of what I do, and that attracts a certain type of person as well. Would be my personal ideal clients. Overall, I'd say I've learned how to grow into my personal brand, because at first it was a lot of throw spaghetti at the wall, see what sticks. And now for me, it's, I don't even really need to think about it or question it. I know who I am, what my values are, who I belong to, as you said, and who I attract, that I'm so much more confident in how I show up and who will like me and who won't, and who will want to work with me and who won't. So for me, it's definitely helped me connect with the right kinds of people that I want to work with, and equally reject and diffuse all the people that I'm not really that keen on. So yeah, it's worked well for me.
Well, and yeah, because that was the thing that stands up to me, like, I feel you get really good engagement. Like when I'm looking at LinkedIn and the amount of people that are actually engaging with your posts, there tends to be a lot of lean in, a lot of buy-in from people. And this made me curious around, like, what are the things that, like, draw people in to really sort of feel comfortable with someone? And that's where I think, like, that personal brand, which for you, like, and it's clearly, like, very authentic, and it's, you're just being you in many ways, though there's always an element of strategy that goes behind it when you're doing it online, because it can easily not get across, and so that's where the ability to communicate comes in. What do you see anything, or have you reflected anything that you think is attributes to that engagement and buy-in that you've got from your audience?
That's a good question. I think you alluded to it just a second ago, authenticity. Again, a bit of a buzzword, but I just feel like the more yourself that you can be, the easier it's going to be to grow your brand, because you can really tell when someone's being a bit fake. And I think the key thing for me is I try and be as the 80% version of me online. I try and emulate that when I'm having calls with people as well, because if there's a disconnect in what you present online versus who you are offline, that creates a bit of distrust. So I think when you're building a brand, you have to be so careful in how you want to show up. And this is a big one for founders as well. You know, they want to come across like way more intelligent or authoritative, but they lose that goofy side. And I feel like the goofy side is what's going to attract the right people. And to show personality is really important, because otherwise you're not going to stand out. And the personality part is what makes you unique, and that's what draws people to you. And if you dull down that personality to try and fit in, you won't get the same engagement offline and online, because that's a critical part of you. And that's probably why my engagement and my metrics are fairly high, because I've really learned how to smooth out that disconnect and make sure that it aligns, and that the values that I stand for are very stable, as well as the fact that I inject a lot of personality and dark humor, because that's what makes me, and I'm not going to turn that or switch that off. If someone says they don't like it, that's on them, you know, it's not really a me problem. I remember once I used a hook that was, I guess, fairly, I don't know what the term is, promiscuous, outrageous, whatever, but I said that I'd popped my speaking virginity, or my speaker virginity, and someone went out of their merry way to message me on LinkedIn and say, do you know what this means and what this infers? A woman of your stature should not be talking like this, and this is very rude. And I was like, oh my god, go and take a hike. I was like, this is so, and I just thought, I rarely ever get people who don't like the way I speak or act, but there have been a couple that have said, oh, you shouldn't swear, it doesn't sound, it's not very ladylike, and yeah, don't use euphemisms. And I was like, oh my god, this sounds like a you problem, and immediate block. So yeah, guess that's why my metrics are higher, because I just shattered the status quo.
Well, it's kind of the byproduct of doing something engaging, and that actually gets people engaged, is that then you have the ability to evoke positive emotions and negative emotions, and you kind of, if you're going to get one, you're going to get the other. It's kind of like you're either going to get, if you get engagement, you're going to get all forms of engagement. If you get no engagement, then you're going to really get no engagement, and it's a bit of a grind. And that's a skill. It's a skill to work out how to get yourself out there and get yourself to be engaging. And then you've also got to be okay, though, that it's, that doesn't mean that it's always going to be perceived positively, and you can't then over orchestrate it, because it's LinkedIn, there's a billion people on there. So
yeah. Exactly. And I think it's definitely taught me how to care less. Like, I, as a kid, when I was growing up, I really cared what people thought about me, and to the point where I think I had about 20 different personalities, because I just wanted to be accepted so badly. But the version that I share of myself on LinkedIn is the closest, truest version. And don't get me wrong, there's a good 20% I don't share, because no one needs to see when I'm having a mental breakdown, okay? You know, I'm going to keep that for myself. But equally, it doesn't mean it's not happening, and I'll be honest if something isn't quite right. But equally, I want to be a role model. I want to show people what's possible. So I use my brand in a way to reflect that. And I've had a lot of people who have been following me for a long time say, because of you, I've started my business, or because of you, I've actually booked my one-way ticket. And that for me is way more powerful and fulfilling than, I don't know, just sharing content for the sake of it. It's like, for me, there is a byproduct again of, I want the right people to see this message, and I want it to, you know, bring people close together to what their, to their dreams. So yeah, if there is people that don't really like me, I'm just so much clearer in who I am and what I care about, that it's not really as much of an issue. And that's why, you know, I rarely ever get any backlash. I can probably count on one hand some comments that I've got, but equally, I've managed to dispel that quite quickly, because, you know, everyone's entitled to their own opinion. If I don't like it, that's okay.
Yeah. And you mentioned we caught up, like, it's a big value for you to be elevating women's voices in small business and an online business. What is it that drives that?
I think something we spoke about last week was the fact that there is misrepresentation. So when you think of a business owner, there's often a stereotype or an archetype of what that could be. And when I was growing up, business owner or entrepreneur really did mean man in suit. And in a company, you know. When I started to grow my own business, I realized for ages I was in a freelancer mindset, and it wasn't until someone said, well, you are running a business, that it completely switched for me, because I realized at that point everything I thought I knew about business was wrong in a way. And now I just want to show that representation, that you don't need to be a certain age or a certain gender or have a certain status to be a business owner. So if that means you want to start something from your bedroom and work in your pajamas and label yourself a solopreneur or an entrepreneur, you absolutely can. And what I've realized is it's typically a lot of women, young women, that can get overshadowed, but specifically younger generations generally. So I wanted to show people that this is a viable career option. And if I can show you that I'm able to do that without the suits, without the Prada bags, XYZ, and the Tesla car, then anyone can do that. And it's just part of my key purpose, I guess, is showing people what's possible and accessible and how you can make it happen for you.
What are some of the mindsets that you had to sort of either let go of or adopt to really be able to press forward with that?
A big one was productivity. When you're running a business or you're self-employed and you're freelance, whatever that label that is, you have to really hone in on the fact that you won't be working 9 to 5. The rhythm is very different, and not feel guilty if you're not working all day, because some of the tasks that you're doing are worth maybe 4 or 5 different jobs, and you're cramming that into 4 hours. So it's no wonder that after 3 o'clock, you feel a bit tired and you don't really want to do anything else because you've already done quite a lot. So I think, yeah, getting out of that productivity guilt mindset. Another one was confidence and expertise, and then how much you charge for that work. When I first started out, I definitely wasn't charging in the realms of what some people can earn as ghostwriters or personal branding consultants. Like the average, I think, is like 2K per client for maybe writing 12 posts. And at the time, I really lowballed. I think I'd charged £250 to £300 for 12 posts, and I was so overworked. And then I think realizing that you can charge more, it's not icky to do that either. It's just, if you want to be running a sustainable business, you need to choose, one, how many clients you're able to work with and what capacity that is, but equally what you should be charging for that, and documenting the expertise and the skills and the results so that you know what value that you're providing. So that was a key one as well. Yeah, just wanting to earn more, and how do I go about that? Yeah, a lot of your worth is kind of tied to your work and the money that you earn, and that's another one that you have to grow out of, because writing is very emotional, but equally it's not personal. And that was one that I had to really have an out-of-body experience for. When I was sharing my work back with clients, I had to to really just take every bit of feedback with a pinch of salt, but equally stand my ground. So it's, yeah, taught me more how to be confident in how I communicate with clients. Other mindsets, especially in terms of business and teaching yourself how to do things, is leaning into risk. Nothing's going to happen if you don't risk it. And change, get mentors, get guidance. You're not perfect. You don't need to be, because that doesn't exist. So always be learning, have a growth mindset essentially, and always be learning from other people, from courses, from yourself, but just being happy with change, because there is a lot of change and it happens very quickly. I think I read a statistic of, especially with entrepreneurship, something along the lines of, you learn 3 times the average job that you do, or the average role in a year that you do when you run a business, because it's just escalated so quickly.
Say that again. So if you learn 3 times as much in running a business, is that what was it?
Something along those lines, yeah. Don't quote me on the exact statistic, but yeah, you learn at a much faster rate. So if you had in a role in a full-time job for a year, you would learn 3 times the skills in that year that you would if you were self-employed.
It makes sense because it's all around exposure to things that you have to deal with versus when you're in a job. There's a whole bunch of things where you're like, oh, that's not my job.
And that comes with a lot of imposter syndrome sometimes as well. So if that's another mindset I'm still learning to come out of. That's not something that I've mastered yet. But you often think other people are doing it better than you, and you're sometimes your own worst critic as well. So I guess part of that is learning what to delegate, and what we said earlier, if you don't enjoy doing something, don't do it. Like, I fucking hate finances. I'm not going to do them. So I have someone to help me do that. And, you know, I have get an accountant, do the basics, and I've got a tool. I use QuickBooks. Thank God for that, because otherwise I'd be crying myself to sleep every day.
Well, it's funny, actually. I think back to, so before I was done, I was doing that, and I was working for a builder. So, and this is maybe between 2013, 2018, I was working with him. And it was only towards the end of that time that he actually started getting out of his checkbook, and his daughter got him set up on online banking. And so he used to always write me a check, like a literal paper check at the end of the week that I would take it. Like, love that guy. Best builder in Australia in my books, but, definitely wasn't the most tech savvy guy. So for the first couple of years, I was literally walking back into the bank and checking a check because that was just where he was at.
Yeah, that is wild. That is so old school.
Yeah, very old school. Nada, thanks so much for coming on. How can people find you if they want to get in touch, follow along, talk to you about ghostwriting?
Oh, Alex, it's been amazing to be on the show. So thank you so much for inviting me on and making some good thoughts out of my waffle, considering that you're on second coffee. So, you know, you had an advantage. If you want to follow me, you can definitely find me on LinkedIn. It's where I'm probably most active, Naida Allen. And I do have a TikTok. It's a work in progress, definitely slightly more unhinged than you'll find on LinkedIn, but equally good stuff.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for joining me today. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And let's connect on LinkedIn so that we can keep the conversation going. Or head to my website and download my free resource, The Career Building Principles. Bye for now.